Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Hi, welcome to Thursday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the icy Chicago River on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. You heard Bill Geiger's voice there. He'll be along a little bit later to talk about your retirement plans. Dennis Rodkin in the second half hour. A lot of housing numbers. What neighborhoods are hot in Chicago? Which suburbs? Things like that. And also, I want to talk to him about the rent control. I know Crane's did a little survey with the mayoral candidates about rent control, and I had a chance to talk to a couple of those candidates about that this morning. So we'll talk to Dennis a little bit later, but I want to start this afternoon with Rochelle Garner, who's on the phone line now, the features and news editor at CNET. Rochelle, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, and I'm glad I'm here in California, and after listening to your weather forecast, really glad I'm not in Chicago.
Rochelle, it's a weird thing, and I talked about it a little yesterday. Everyone here is talking about it, but it's like it's Christmas Day or Christmas Eve around, especially yesterday. There's just no one downtown. It's empty. Everyone stayed home. More people out today, so we got used to it in just one day, but things will get better. So tell me first, I want to talk about this Apple Facebook spat, but before that, you guys have a call up about robocalls and a study by Robocall Radar that said robocalls in 2017 to 2018 were up 46%, or rather were up, I guess, 46% last year. We're talking billions and billions. And these are cell phone calls, I'm assuming, right?
These are mostly cell phone calls, and it feels to me as if I've gotten most of those billions of mobile calls on my mobile phone. I think probably easily 90% of the calls I get are robocalls.
I get very few robocalls on my cell phone, and I know the exchange, when I get them, they sort of try to mask my number. They all come from this town, LaGrange, so I know when I'm getting them. I haven't received that many, so why do you think that is?
I think you're lucky, and I wouldn't basically advertise that fact if I were you,
right.
Because your time is going to come. What's interesting is a lot of people ask, well, why aren't the do-not-calls
right.
working? And it's because there's not much that can be done. It's already illegal to make these phone calls, but these days all a telemarketer needs is a computer, a modem, and a program that just robo-dials from any database. And that means scammers can make these calls from overseas, where there's not much they can do about them. So I personally, for example, have 3 spam blockers on my phone.
Really?
Because, as I mentioned, easily 90% of the calls I get are bogus.
And so the spam blockers, are they pretty good at weeding out fake phone calls?
They do a really pretty good job, but no one is perfect, which is why I have 3. AT&T offers a free one. Free is free.
Uh-huh.
I also pay for Hiya, which is one of the ones that came out with this information, and another one called RoboKiller. Not that I'm necessarily endorsing them, but those work for me. And they do look, for example, you mentioned that if it's from LaGrange, you know it's a fake one. It's called neighbor spoofing, and these calls will automatically block those. I don't even see them, but I have a chance to go back and let the application either let them go through or continue to block them.
Have you ever missed a call that you wanted to receive?
One time it did, and for me that's enough of a reason to...
You'll make
that's
that trade.
That's not enough for me to put up with the inconvenience of it.
I also read in the article, which was interesting to me, that the populations where robocalls were most frequent were mostly in Texas, and the story seemed to intimate that that's because of the migrant population there and the fears, and people, the bad guys might be preying on people who are most afraid. Is that what they're saying?
So it's a combination of things. One of the really big robocalls has to do with the IRS, the spam.
Right.
And in fact, these spams not only are directed to that population, but to the older population.
Rochelle, I have gotten that call, and my daughter's gotten that call, and if you're caught unawares, that can be very scary.
It's totally, and you just have to recognize, as we say repeatedly, the IRS will never call you. There's no such thing as Windows tech support. It will never call you. Apple tech support will just never call you out of the blue. Your banks are never going to call you out of the blue. These are the kinds of spam calls that come through that prey on people who just aren't sophisticated to know that this is not something that, is going to happen to them. So they're really going after, like they say, Texas, because it has a large population that tends to be more vulnerable. I would imagine other states with large retired communities right. would also be at risk.
Okay, let's jump to this Apple Facebook thing. It kind of broke, I think, yesterday, but Apple has cut off Facebook on some certification because of how Facebook was paying users to collect their data.
This is an interesting one.
Explain
so
it for
they
me.
They have a special app that they were paying people ages 13 to 35, 25, up to 20 a month, plus with some referral fees. And it was an app that you basically gave Facebook permission to look at everything that you do on your phone, where you look, where you go, and even your private messages. Well, if you're 13 to 18, you're not even thinking about the security. But Apple specifically precludes any application developer from doing that sort of thing. So once they found out on Wednesday, they cut off Facebook. Done.
And that's having a real impact.
It is internally, because these applications that it means that people inside Facebook who are developing new apps to be used can't actually get to their own apps. This was, it really hurt their internal development. It's their own employees who can't get to this stuff now. So all the apps that they're working on is beta. The people inside Facebook can't work on, because Apple said no. That was a major hand slap.
And so
Google did the same thing, but Google recognized, our bad, we're cutting it off right now. So they didn't have a chance to be slapped by Apple. They said this should never have been allowed.
So what happens next then with Apple and Facebook?
That's the big question. I think that Facebook is going to have to go basically beg Apple. We promise never, never, never to do it again. They basically sidestepped Apple. Apple has a program where app developers are able to distribute these sorts of apps for their own internal use. Well, Facebook made it available to everybody.
I see.
And that's where they went amiss.
Amazing thing. You know, Facebook is always in trouble, all kinds of scandals, but the numbers keep going up, right? They were up 9% year over year, was reported earlier this week, 2.32 billion users in the fourth quarter of last year. Rochelle Gardner, a senior editor at CNET.com. Great to talk to you again. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, and thank you, and you stay warm.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and we thank them for that. Dennis Rodkin from Crane Chicago Business will be along in the second half hour, and we'll talk to him about some of the home sales for the year 2018, what areas were hot and which ones weren't, things like that. And it's interesting. So Chicago has never heated up with the housing market, but it's kind of chugging along. So while other markets are starting to drop off a bit, Chicago seems to be a little steady Freddy. We'll talk to Dennis about that, and I'll try not to use the word steady Freddy or the phrase again. Bill Geiger is in the studio now to talk retirement. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back, friend.
Good afternoon, sir.
Okay, so I think we did some of this on the air, but maybe most of it was off the air. You and I were talking last week about how the people coming into retirement now,
right,
more than ever, are the ones who have been responsible for their own retirement all along, right? So
right.
My parents' generation, most of them, many of them, had a pension in one form or another. I'm the youngest baby boomer. I have a mini pension
right.
still coming. It's not going to matter a lot, but my concern or my thought is that we're coming upon this sort of precipice where all of these people who for the past 30 years have been responsible for their own savings are not going to be ready for that.
Steve, here's how the statistics work out. 42% of baby boomers have no money saved for retirement.
42%.
42%.
And so those are people, and I'm 55, almost 56, so those are people older than me.
Right. 1946, 1964, those are the baby boomer generation. 42% of those folks have no money saved for retirement. 38% have $100,000 or less. Add those two together, 80% of baby boomers have less than $100,000 saved for retirement. They are absolutely not ready.
What's going to happen? And this is as we worry about the future of Social Security.
Well, Social Security will be there for them, but of course it's not going to be enough.
Right.
The other part of this problem about people not being ready for retirement is folks that are in that top 20% that have saved some money. I can tell you that in our office, probably two-thirds of the portfolios that we evaluate, they're not ready for retirement. They're not allocated correctly. They've got way, 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 way too much risk, and they've done nothing to start figuring out how to create income for the retirement.
So they're
not ready either.
I want to talk micro about that, but just quickly macro.
Okay.
I mean, it seems like we could be heading toward a real national situation.
Well, what's happening is people are working longer by necessity. They're working longer, or they're trying to work longer.
Right.
And that doesn't always work out that way. If you don't have the money saved up for retirement, you better start getting serious. If you do have the money saved up for retirement, let me give you a micro example.
Sure, absolutely.
sat down with a couple a week ago, $1 million portfolio, run by a major trust company here in Chicago. Their portfolio on the cover sheet of their statement said balanced return portfolio. How's
okay.
that sound?
I like that idea. That's what we're looking
balanced
for.
Balanced return.
Right?
Sounds kind of nice, kind of safe, kind of sleep well at night, right? We analyzed that portfolio using Morningstar, which is one of the tools we use. And Morningstar, not us, but Morningstar said the next big downturn, these folks are going to lose 48%
wow.
of their portfolio. They had no idea, not a clue. So they think they've got $1 million and maybe it'll be a little bit bigger by the time they get to retirement. They could lose half of it. Now, how ready would they be at that point?
Half is ready.
Well, they're going to work. It's going to change their retirement.
I've said this to you before, where I'm always surprised at how little I know, or I'm always surprised by what I learn. I look at my 401k, we joke about it. Sometimes I play with calculators to see where I am. I forgot, or you don't realize when you're looking at your number where it is now,
right.
that you've accumulated all that money pre-tax,
right?
I mean,
right.
which is great.
Right.
It's a great benefit, but there still is going to be a tax to pay on some of that. So when you're looking at your balance, it's not all your money.
But you can drag it out and basically make it all your
oh,
money.
Oh, can you? That's yeah. what an expert like you
yeah,
is for.
Yeah, if you're just pulling a little bit at a time, that tax is get spread out over the rest of your life.
I'm going to sleep a little bit earlier tonight then.
Yeah. Steve, we haven't done this for a while.
Okay.
But for folks that are listening out there, if you're in that category where you've got some money saved for retirement, and we say $500,000 and up, if you're in that category and you're not quite sure whether you're allocated correctly, whether you're diversified correctly, whether you're really ready to go into retirement, you're going to give the number in a moment, but for the first five callers who have at least $500,000, we'll sit down with them personally, do a complete analysis of their portfolio, and on a complimentary basis, put together a full-blown retirement plan for them.
Bill Geiger, thanks for coming by. We'll see you again next week.
My pleasure, sir. Nice to be here.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, in the studio now is Dennis Rodkin. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. You can find these stories and more at chicagobusiness.com. Dennis comes by every week or so, every other week. Dennis, welcome back.
Hi, Steve.
And kudos to you. You also braved the temperatures to come in. I just think that's a sign of your devotion to us, and we appreciate
that's a sign that. Of my devotion to you, Steve. Yeah, my car, unfortunately, is not as devoted. It didn't make it.
And so what did you, how'd you get into it?
I took Metro. I was just going to the Metro station.
Oh, okay, so that's not too bad. But I still feel badly for you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I had a really interesting conversation this morning. Bill Daly was in, and most mornings I go sit in the green room and read all of your articles. No, I mean, so that's what I was doing, reading the articles, getting ready to talk today, and in comes Bill Daly, and so I started picking his brain. We had a great conversation about some of the things you're writing about.
Oh.
And we'll get to the rent control, which is one thing specifically, but he was talking about how he was on the West Side and he was talking about what's the biggest threat here, and someone said, you know, it's gentrification. And you write about the neighborhoods in the city that were the most successful in the real estate market last year, and they were the South Side neighborhoods.
Yeah, and I don't think most of it is gentrification. Generally, there are a bunch of things happening on the South Side. One is this wave of rehab of foreclosures and distressed properties, which we've talked about numerous times, which has cleaned up thousands of properties on the South Side.
I mean, they started, the floor was pretty low.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, so that's one of the things, is that prices are higher now because a lot of these were selling as foreclosures. But so there's that. There is a lot of assistance from agencies, city, state, and federal, to buy in those neighborhoods, which is wonderful. So a lot of people who have the right income but may not have a down payment are able to buy and may not have been a few years ago. Employment is healing. Black unemployment is healing. So there are a lot more people who are in a position to buy. And there's just this feeling that, you know, the South Side is far more affordable. So there are some people who are moving down to the South from the North, but I don't think it counts as gentrification just
no,
yet.
No. And I didn't mean to imply that was all of it, but that's part of it. But so people are moving into Englewood.
Yeah. I actually spoke to a homeowner. The number of homes sold in Englewood rose significantly in 2018 over 2017. And I spoke to a woman who grew up in Humboldt Park. She said, you know, Humboldt Park, when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, was considered as bad as Englewood is now. Right. She said, I'm used to it. I have seen shootings and things like that when I was a kid, and I can't afford Humboldt Park, where her parents live. She was shopping, and she found a good home, a really nice, recently rehabbed home in Englewood, moved in. There's a lot going on down there. There's the Whole Foods. There's the Whole Foods, Starbucks, and Kennedy King College. There's now a STEM high school being built. There is this feeling that maybe Englewood starts to come back.
Who are the Downing Brothers? I think I've seen TV commercials for them.
Downing Brothers, really interesting. They're twins. They're 37-year-old firefighters on the South Side doing a lot of rehab, and they have they're developing a show for HGTV. I think they've done an episode, and they have to get highly rated or something to run the show farther.
Yeah. Okay. And so, but that's what they're flipping the houses that we're talking about.
Yeah, they did one in Pill Hill. They did it beautifully. I got to say, it's as stylish as any home anywhere. And that's great, because buyers are looking for bargains, but they're also looking for style, right? And they found, and it didn't have cherry cabinets like you have at home.
Oh, I know. I'm going to change my flooring. I went to a rehab. I'm going to change the flooring in my kitchen now.
Call the Downing Brothers.
But it's so funny, because I wonder if they were redevelopers first or twins first. Well, clearly they were twins first.
I think they were twins. They were firefighters
first. Isn't
there
a successful, is that maybe the new thing? You have twins who, isn't there another TV show of twins? One guy's a real estate guy, and one guy's on HGTV or something.
I don't know. Are you thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito?
No. I'm telling you, I think they're out of Texas or something. Okay, then the other thing, less than a minute, but that brings us to rent control.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Daly about that. I said, what do you say? And, you know, he said, where it works best is where it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was something that the legislature should look at rather than, he seemed pretty cautious. You guys, Cranes, talked to a lot of different mayoral candidates about this, and it seems like a minority of them are for this full-blown rent control in Chicago.
Two who were at the Chicago Association of Realtors forum are in favor, and a third who was not at the forum has spoken out in favor of lifting the ban on rent control. So, as you know, rent control is banned in the state of Illinois for use by any municipality by state law. So there's this two-step process going on. Can we change the state law to allow municipalities to have rent control? And then would Chicago and other municipalities individually set up rent control? So the Chicago Association of Realtors had a mayoral forum. Their CEO said at the beginning, look, we're opposed to rent control.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure,
they
right,
would
right.
oppose that whole process. And most of the people, most of the candidates who spoke, there were nine who were there, were opposed.
A conversation today, one area that where it is new is in San Francisco, but that's because the poor have been so squeezed there by the changes.
And so it's interesting to hear Daly say that where it works is where it's been in effect for a long time, because a lot of people will tell you New York, which has had rent control longer than other cities in America, a lot of people will tell you that it doesn't really work there, but I'd love to talk with him about that.
Well, you know more about it than me, but he just seemed to say that's where it works better than other places. But okay, Dennis Rodkin, Crane Chicago Business, we're going to take a break, and we talked about the hot neighborhoods. We'll talk about the hot suburbs in a minute or two. Right now, this on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Mark my words, in 15 years, coding will be one of the basic day-to-day office requirements like Excel is right now. The big concern for many is that we didn't learn it in school, though, so we just won't know how. Myself included. But there are options to help, just like the new Flatiron School in Chicago. It's a coding school that was founded in New York, acquired by WeWork, and now they opened up their latest location here in Chicago. They offer a range of coding engineering classes, and they go all the way up to $15,000 for a 15-week immersive class. So don't fall behind. Better yourself. I mean, just look at Boeing. They've been working hard to better themselves, and they've been proving it through their numbers. Their latest earning report showed that they pulled in $100 billion of revenue. What can I say? The airline industry is lucrative, and people are wanting to travel more than ever, and airlines want to stay up to date on how they get passengers wherever they're going. You know us millennials, just spending all of our money on trips to Europe just so we can post a picture on Instagram. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. You can read more from him at chicagobusiness.com. Okay, we talked about the city and how the southern neighborhoods tended to do better when it came to hot neighborhoods. You also wrote about the suburbs. I didn't notice a geographical pattern there, or is there?
Well, it's not as heavy. It's not as focused on the suburbs, but there were many in the suburbs. So what we do to make this list, what I do is I look at all the city neighborhoods and separately all the suburbs, year-end data from the real estate groups, and I look for places where three signs are all positive. More sales in the year over the previous year at a higher median price and shorter time on the market.
Okay.
Those three, and there are about 180 suburbs that I can get data for. Only 27 had all three of those signs flashing positive. That doesn't mean that other markets are hurting. It just means that these are the ones that improved most, were most robust in 2018. And a lot of them were south for
Okay.
Yeah, not all. It wasn't as heavy on the south, but there were a lot. And it's a similar reason to the south side of the city, and that is affordability. People are in the upper end neighborhoods and upper end suburbs. There's been a little bit of a cooling off. There was too much, in many cases, too much inventory. Prices started to sag because when there's a lot on the market, you can pay a little bit less. But in a lot of these south suburbs, including every town named Palos, Palos Hills, Palos Heights, and Palos Park, Orland, Tinley, in all of those, all three of those indicators were positive in 2018.
So southwest suburbs in a little bit there.
Yeah. And there was also Oak Lawn, and then up in the north, there's Antioch, Hoffman Estates, Lake Zurich, Winthrop Harbor. They're generally farther out from the city. I think that's because a lot of the improvement already happened closer into the city in earlier years, and now the recovery's kind of rolling out that far.
Well, when you look at what we're making on our houses, I think the figure was from some study was about $30,000.
Yeah, on average.
Which is about, what, half of the national average?
Half the national average. Yeah, that's data out today from Adam, which looks at the whole country. And so that's a gross figure. What did you pay for your house when you bought it? What did you get when you sold it? Doesn't figure in any improvements, renovations, that sort of thing. And in 2018, Chicago area sellers averaged $30,000 profit, while nationally it was $60,000. In San Francisco, it was over $300,000. And one of the issues with that figure, you know, profiting $30,000 is nice, but that's the average. That means that a lot of people, generally what you do is you take the proceeds from your house and roll them into the next one as you're moving up. And that doesn't cover much of a jump, especially because middle class people in particular are likely to also use that for moving expenses and that sort of thing. So your down payment is dwindling. And it makes it difficult to sell, or it makes it difficult to buy your next house.
Which means it's difficult to sell a house if you're trying to sell a house.
So a lot of people say, well, then I just won't sell.
Okay, so Dennis comes in every couple of weeks and brings us all this negative housing news.
You're welcome.
The percentage of home price growth in Illinois or the Chicago area is about half of what the national average is.
Right.
But it's not going down.
But it's not going down, yeah.
So right. is like the little engine that could, or what is that?
Well, part of it is that we weren't pumping so much air into our market. A lot of the places where prices were rising in double digits in the course of the past year or 2 years have started to slow down. So over the past 9 months, on a monthly basis, home prices have grown by less each month in the last 9 months nationally, but for that entire period they've stayed at about 3% year locally. Over year, month after, in each of those 9 months in the Chicago area. So while our home price growth is more modest, it's also not eroding. It's not shrinking now. So it does have sort of a little engine that could sort of element.
Yeah, but by that little engine's still way down the tracks, right?
Yeah,
so it's going to take a long time for us to catch. I mean,
right.
And they're would have to continue to sag considerably.
But again, as a buyer, that's a really good thing, because home prices, I can sort of look out ahead and say, well, you know, it's going to cost me this much now. If I wait 6 months because I'm about to change jobs or whatever it is, here's approximately what it might be then, while in other places it's a little more difficult to forecast.
Is that what's allowed Ken Griffin to buy so many houses?
Yeah, he's really concerned about now. Ken Griffin, who spent over $760 million on homes in London, New York, Miami, Palm Beach, Chicago, Hawaii, Colorado, and I don't know where else. I don't think he's very sensitive to interest rates or price increases. He's bought the most expensive home in London, in the United States, in New York, in Chicago, in Palm Beach.
And it's been talked about a lot, and I don't want to beat a dead horse.
It's a big story these days.
Beat a dead billionaire. But why? What's the point of that, of owning such lavish houses in so many markets?
I don't know, because he hasn't responded to any of my emails.
No, okay.
But I think, well, he's got business in London, he's got business in New York, and of course his Citadel financial empire is based here in Chicago. One article refers to him as the ultimate trophy hunter.
Yeah.
He's not out bagging big game, but he's out bagging big properties. I honestly don't know. He does not respond to my emails. His spokespeople don't respond. So I don't have any inkling of his motivation, except that he's got a lot of money. He's worth $10 billion. He has spent a very small share of his net worth on houses. It's just that his net worth is stratospheric compared to mine.
Dennis Rodkin, thanks for coming in. I'll come over and jump your car later today, all right?
Thanks, Steve.